Thank you, Randy. A number of years ago, a gentleman known to some of us here, he was from Northern Ireland and raised by an aunt. And he lived for quite a number of years in this country. And then he was determined to go back to Ireland, or Northern Ireland, to visit this dear old aunt. And he thought, well, maybe I'll surprise her. And he said, no, I better write her because of her age. So he wrote to say that he was coming. He went over and he saw his aunt. And he told her, he says, you know, I was thinking of surprising you and not telling you that I was coming. She says, oh, I'm so glad you told me. She says, the anticipation of your coming was so sweet. Is the anticipation of the Lord's coming sweet? That will be glory for me when by his grace I shall look on his face. That will be glory. Be glory for me. Now we're going to ask George to come forward and lead us in a hymn. Give you a chance to stand and stretch. And then John Jeffers will be interviewing Barry McDowell, who has served the Lord for so many years in Zaire. And we'll get ready for that while you're singing this hymn. George?
It's indeed great to see such a large crowd here this morning. We're going to do something we haven't done in a few years, and I have to commend the workers to rise and identify yourselves. We'll first ask those that are commended to the overseas work, if they would stand, please. There's enough of you here, that's it. On two, there we are. Come on. We have Mrs. McDowell down here. Allison Ruby White. I can't see the next one. Who's Madeline Rousseau? Right. And Paul and Lois? Right. I can't see back there. Connie Bear's there. Who's over here? Myrtle's back there. Okay. Very good. Now, any commended homeworkers? I know there's some of you here. There we are. Don Dunkerton. Say who you are, please. Good. Mel Whitson. Right. Kingsley Bear and Don Dunkerton. I can't see that far back. Okay. Who else? Bob and Winnie Gay. I can see that far. And in the back there, who's that? Henry? Okay, Henry's and Sarah Sanchez. Certainly happy to have you all here. About 10 days ago, we had a fax message, that wonderful device from Honduras, that about 2 o'clock one morning, after some heavy rains, they had mudslides, and 10 believers lost their house and homes and everything they have, and 2 of the believers' children were killed down in Honduras. We want to remember them in prayer. And then on Monday, Floyd Pierce is undergoing a colonoscopy because he seems to have a malignancy requiring wide surgical something or other of the lesion. I'm not a medical man, but pray for him on Monday as he undergoes the test. And then Sue Bates was to go back to Romania to join her husband, and she's been diagnosed as having hepatitis. The doctor wants her to remain in the States for another month, so remember these and the others in prayer. Now, wow. My first question I was going to ask Barron is, his wife with him today? And if she was, we'd have her stand up. Well, we've answered that already. She's here and she stood up. Now I'm going to ask Barron if he wouldn't tell us something about how he was led to the Lord and then to the mission field.
Well, I was born twice in a little town out in north central Iowa called Fort Dodge. I was baptized in a liberal Baptist church. I answered all their questions, but I wasn't saved. Every Sunday morning, after Sunday school, we closed the class, it's recording John 3:16 and 17. But they never applied it. He that believeth, you know, shall not perish, but have everlasting life. I believe that Christ came to the world and died for sinners, but it never dawned on me that it meant me. Made it personal. That's There are hundreds today, thousands today in the same place. They know all about it, but they never applied it. And so we had a neighbor, Lloyd Walters, the publisher, and he wasn't interested just in going to heaven himself. He wanted others to go with him. And so he sent to Pennsylvania, Dublin, Bucks County, and he got Harold Harper to come out and bring his gospel tent and pitch it in a vacant lot in the hometown. That tent stood there for 6 weeks. Basically preaching the gospel. I was brought up with three brothers, and our folks kept track of us. They didn't want us to know where we're going at night, and they wanted to know where we're going, what we're doing. They wasn't allowed to fly out of the house without telling them where I'm going. I told my mother I was going down that tent. She said, well, that's not too bad. You couldn't get any wrong going down there. But I didn't go near the place. And my conscience finally got after me, and I thought I'd better just put in an appearance. So a friend and I went. It was the last night, Sunday night, packed out. Let down the walls of the tent, and I got a seat on the outside. I thought I was better than my friend. He went to church about twice a year, Christmas and Easter. I had to go every Sunday. But, you know, I got... Preacher was using a chart that night, two roads and two destinies. And I found out that I was on that clean footpath that was going to hell. And it shook, it really shook me to my roots. I walked home with my friend, and coming back, I passed by the tent. By that time, the walls were up and they were inside. You know what they're doing? They're praying. They're asking God to save souls. God got a hold of me and wouldn't let me go home until I go in there and talked it over. They didn't give an altar call, but they said, anybody who's interested to know what's happening, like coming with God to talk to you. They thought I was one of the kids, neighbor kids, heckling, so they want to chase me away. But they found out what I was after and said, just stand by until Mr. Harper says goodbye to his friends and he'll talk to you. And there underneath the light in that, on that camp seat in this tent, I realized that Christ died for me. That I, like a lost sheep, had gone astray. But on him was laid my iniquity, and I accept him as my Savior. The joy of the Lord filled my heart. I went home that night, and I saw a car coming out of the street. He says, you can hit me, it's all right, I'll go to heaven tonight. And I got home, my mother said, what are you coming in so late for? I told him I got saved on that gospel tent. Something strange, but she checked it out, and the further she came in the assembly herself. Well, years went by. I graduated from high school in the Depression years. Looked for a job. There wasn't any. Well, I finally found an old German signwriter. He said, I can't give you a job, but come and sweep the floor, clean the brushes, do what you can to make yourself useful, and I'll teach you the trade. So I said, that's great. I came, stayed within 5 years. You know, in those days, men like August Van Ryan, Peter Pell, John Watt, John Smart, Bruce Gilbert, James Spink, and others came through Fort Dodge and ministered. Not very many missionaries, once in a while, but I heard enough about mission work that I was interested. And I finally said goodbye to my parents and went to Chicago. Chicago is kind of the crossroads of the nations. You know, a lot of missionaries came through there. While I was there, going to Moody, I went down to South Side of Chicago, 186th Street, and I saw an old missionary named George Maitland. He'd been out in Angola for years. Old white-haired men just tottering, you know, and I said, hey, what's he going back there for? Where are the young fellows to replace him? You know, we're good at passing the buck. But during those years, a medical doctor from Nigeria came and he talked to the students. He shook us to our roots. He says, what are you doing with your life? And I remember at that time definitely promising the Lord I'd be willing to go to Africa. But the war was on. No way you could go. Boats weren't going across. They're going to the bottom. Mm-hmm. I got an opportunity to go up to Sault Ste. Marie in the tip of Lake Superior there with a old Scotch evangelist pitching a tent. His name is William Hine. And he said, you want to work? There's plenty of work to do up here. Come along. I enjoyed it. Spent the summer with him. And then a friend that sit off in the North Bay says, the young people are interested here. I need some help. So I wrote back to Chicago. The draft board had my number and my name. And they said, well, give you another 6 months. And I kept on. The several summers with the gospel tent and sit off in the winter and the fall. And, you know, the war was over. And a man named Ed Harrow came up to North Bay, and he'd been out to Belgian Congo before the war. And he showed pictures of what was going on over that. And, you know, you promised the Lord something, you better stay with it. He kept nudging me, how about it now? Times, now's the time. And, you know, I couldn't get it off my mind. I kept thinking about it. And I was enjoying serving the Lord in Canada. That was great, but that's not where the Lord wanted me. So I finally went down to Toronto and said, Ed, how about it? I'm thinking about Congo. He said, oh, if you're really serious about thinking about Congo, you better get busy and learn some French. You're going to need it over there. The Belgians have control of the country, and that's one of the official languages. He says, come on down to Toronto. My wife will help you. There's a French class at Emmaus, and you can audit some of the other classes. And by the way, when you need something to pay your board and room, call on down to the office and get us some artwork to do. Well, that was the beginning of things. And in the meantime, I'd sent some money to the fields, and they sent it out to, I didn't know where to send it, they sent it out to Robert Jean, Bill Dean's father. And he wrote back to me, and I got some more information. And I'm at the speed from home in Furlough. And one way or another, the Lord kept pointing me in that direction. Until later in 1946, my wife and I were married in Nova Scotia, and we did a little French study and got our needles, and Dr. Hill down in Sherbrooke, and we got on a boat headed for Africa. Well, that's just kind of a little resume of how the Lord led me under.
Very good. You didn't exactly get in there. Suddenly you were married, but how did you meet Lois, and where did you meet her?
Well, when I went down to Toronto, there was an old missionary from Angola, name of Bob McLaren. He says, you're going out there to Africa, eh? Well, he said, you know, I think you ought to start praying the Lord to help, send you help me. That's kind of a rough place to go for a single fellow to go alone. But you know, when you put one foot in the right direction, the Lord will show you the next step. And when Ed Harlow called me down there to Toronto, work. He says, you can sit here at this desk, and there's only one desk in the little Mayo's correspondence school office, and there's the other side of Lois Johnson. And I found out she knew more about Africa than I did. Her uncle, aunt and uncle were out there in Angola for years. They were alone. They were in Elmer alone. And we began comparing notes, you know, and putting one thing together, and finally got placed at Lois. I'm headed for Africa. If you're not interested, let's skip it. She didn't.
That's putting it plainly. That just shows you another thing, how you had to watch the relatives. He's related to David Long. Well, I was going to ask you how long you've been on the mission field, but you told us that. Just about almost 50 years, 48 about.
46.
Well, that's a long time ago. But can you tell us something about the first culture shock you got when you went out there, going from Canada and the United States over to Zaire the first time?
Well, yeah, there were a lot of things that were different. We realized it's going to be different, and it didn't upset us too much. But you know, I see little kids running around bare naked. We don't do it in this country, but over there it was accepted. But you know, we didn't have the gift of tongues. We had to go at it the hard way and put some sweat into and learn the language. And that was a good thing. While we're getting to know the language, we're getting to know the people. The way it worked, we kind of worked into it with other missionaries ahead of us and kind of laid the groundwork, and we put in our apprenticeship with Robert Dean.
Have you seen great changes on the mission field since that time?
Very much so. You know, when we first went out to Congo, the people couldn't read. A toothache, and she said, he said, come on, help my wife. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't. I don't have permission. Well, he got his stationery out there in his big cache, and he sent down to the capital and says, there's not one dentist in this province. Can't you do something with this fellow? Well, the letter came back. I got the green light to start practicing. Mm-hmm.
It's more than practicing. He knows what he's doing. What happened after the evacuation from Zaire about 1964? Where did you go at that time, and how did you use your time?
Well, we went over to Kampala, and then we heard that Jack Tracy down in Kigali and Rwanda needed some text in the new chapel just put up down there. So, Lois, let's go down and spend a couple weeks and make the text, and maybe the Lord will show us the next step from there. It's 2 weeks. Lengthened out to 2 years until we finally got back. Jack needed to come home, and for several good reasons, and he had a radio program started down there, so we volunteered to help with that. The Nationals did the actual speaking, but we coordinated the program, put them together, and took over the radio station. We found down there there was a dental team sent down for Israel. He sent a whole dental team down there for aid work and got acquainted with the head of the team. And he said, look, I want to be here a couple of years. You're going to stay on. Why don't you come up to the hospital and work with me? Come on, Jack, and work with me. You teach me Swahili, and I'll teach you dentistry. That was the goal. And so I knew I'm back to Congo. There are no specialists over there. And I come to an extracted wisdom teeth. I better know how to do it. So he showed me other things along the way. Then time rolled on. The smoke from war cleared over Congo, and we went back again.
So the Lord really used your time there with Jack to prepare you to get back to where the Lord wanted you in the first place, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, as a dentist, you talk about working on the ivories in the mouth sometimes, but don't you also do a little piano tuning on those kind of ivories?
Well,
another talent you have?
Not really. When I went to the field, Harold Harper gave me his piano tuning instruments, and I took them along. And sometimes I could never lay up a temperament, you know, like these piano tuners do, but I hear the piano had been tuned for a few years, and it gets kind of wangy. Some of those notes, you know, slipped. And,
like me singing, you know.
Tighten up some of those strings, you know, and get it to sound a little better. That was about the invention.
I'm sure it was a big help. And did you use your sign painting over there, too?
Sure did. That 5 years in that apprenticeship didn't go off for vain. It's a lot of text to paint in Congo, and we use it in a lot of ways. The station needed a sign out in front, and sometimes Ninalaimani with it. They need the coal porters, need some bags of Ninalaimani, and the screen process helped get that job done. Different ways. It just came in handy every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're going out now for the first time with all the knowledge and experience you have, would you do things any different?
Well, really, you ask the Lord to show you what to do, and as you go along, the way opens it for you.
Mm-hmm.
You seek all the help and advice you can from others. I don't know. I don't think I'd do it any different. It's the way it works.
Leave it to the Lord.
Yeah.
How would you say that a young person, how would you tell a young person that they really have the call of the Lord to go to the mission field? A lot of the people are looking for signs in the corner of the room or something, but how do they really know the Lord wants them on the mission field?
Well, I didn't have any big vision or anything. Like the fellow was plowing corn and he saw the PC in the horizon and said, oh, it means preach Christ. And I said, no, it doesn't. It means preach plow corn. We had, I mentioned to you that I promised the Lord I'd be willing to go. And the Lord guides you in a certain direction. It puts it on your mind, and you can't shake it. You pray about what to do, and you can't. I think that's the secret of knowing the Lord's will. Pray about it, and the Lord guides you. He's able to make known His will to you if you're willing to do what He wants you to do.
In other words, you don't really go to the mission field with a preconceived notion of what you're going to do. You wait and see what the Lord tells you to do when you get over there.
That's right. You confer with those who have been out there for you, and you ask all the questions you can and seek the advice of elders and make friends with people who have a desire to live for the Lord, not just the ambition to get a no convertible coupe and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us something about the situation in Zaire right now. You know, this isn't a great area for world news. What's happening in Zaire, a little bit of the background, and then what the present situation is.
We used to hear quite a bit about it, but there's so much else happening all around the world that's kind of forgotten about Zaire. But it's kind of a stalemate situation. Just to back up a little bit, the Belgians went into the country at the close of the last century, and they had this place for 70 years. And they did a lot to fill it up. I realize in the early days there's some wicked men out there and they took advantage of the people, but latterly they sent out university graduates and fellows who were administrators who did a good job, and they built the roads and they built their hospitals and the schools and they knocked out sleeping sickness, did a lot to build up the country. But then pressure was put upon them, let these people have a right of their own self-determination. It sort of looks easy, but it didn't turn out that way. Independence was the big cry. We just got independence, all our troubles will be over. Well, it didn't work out that way. And now, today, 33 years down the road from independence, this country's a mess. And the ruler of the country came to the end of his term, and I don't know what happens to these men that get power, didn't want to give up, didn't want to step down. And they worked for a year and a half trying to form a government. And they can't put the thing into operation because the big man has the army behind him. He's got the financial, the banks at his command. And the thing is kind of stalemated. I don't know what's going on. He's struggling for the prayers of the saints to pray the place would have blown up before now.
What about travel to and from Zaire? It's more difficult now for the MAF and all of that?
Well, it's... We first went out there. It took us 3 months to get there. Today you can get out there in 3 days. We fly into Nairobi. That's the big international airport. And then MAF picks us up from there and flies across Uganda. And a couple hours, we're home.
But don't they close that border every once in a while?
That happens. I've heard just recently closed.
Well, what are your present plans for the... That's pretty good. Your present plans for the immediate future.
We have bookings to fly out of Washington, D.C. to Amsterdam on the 16th of December, Lord willing. And pick it up the overnight there, and then another off we're down to Nairobi.
Oh, good. We talked a lot about Zaire. What about when you came home? What are the great changes you've seen here in this country since, well, you'll have to go back to your first left, but what great changes have you seen in our country here?
Well, people warned us, the Lord came and said, you're going to see that things are different here. The thing you can't even open your mouth in the schools. Out in Zaire, you know, we have 300-400 children going to school every day, 6 days a week. They follow the old Belgian system, and Saturday morning, get them to school and to an assembly and have an hour with them, or the Word of God, use a flannel graph, whatever, and you can read the Word and pray with them in the classroom. You can't do that here. It's just grieving to see the way this country is closing out. People here are more and more vocal. Those people that are against the Lord and against the gospel are getting more and more vocal, telling you so.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned a lot of opportunities in the schools in Zaire?
That is. In the last year, we're 20 students that confessed Christ in that school. It's a good fishing ground. Mm-hmm. Good place to...
Do you have any contact with the pygmies?
Well, at my stage of the game, I can't hope it to get out there in the fully, but Jonathan Peck's doing it. Basically, goes out every week and visits these camps. That's a frontier that remains. At Lola, they've developed a school, they have a pygmy assembly. We're in a just in the beginning of things at these 10 days.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for young Christians here at home as they look to the Lord and they want to honor the Lord in their lives and look to Him for what they should do in the future? What's good basic advice for a young Christian?
Well, the Lord is the Lord of the harvest. He's the director of the program. And look to Him. And go to your elders. Ask them for help and advice. Get men who are interested in praying with and for you. And the Lord wants you there. He'll make it known to you. If any man will do His will, he shall know. You got that promise. You can go ahead on that promise. If you want to do what God wants you to do, keep looking in the right direction. Look to Him and He'll show you.
Faithfulness in attending the meetings of the local assembly?
Absolutely. That all goes with it, isn't it?
All goes with it.
Buying up your opportunity. If you find it hard to serve the Lord here, it's going to be any issue. And if you get across the water, it's going to be harder.
I'd like you to give us some of your thoughts
just
on this.
One thought on that, too. One thing that helped me as a young man going on, made it known that I wanted to go to Africa, and the elder came and he said, look, you put your face in that direction. Don't look back. Keep going.
Hmm.
A lot of things to discourage, but keep your eyes in the right direction.
Very important. Well, over the years, I'm sure you've seen some very fine examples of the faithfulness of the Lord. Can you give us a few illustrations?
Lots of them.
Good. We don't have 2 hours.
All right.
We do have about 15 minutes.
Well, for instance, my wife and I went out, the two of us. After 6 years, we came back to six of us.
Mm-hmm.
We had a post-trip a little later on, but, you know, we wondered how we're going to make the grade. When we got out there and the children get up to school age, and how are you going to finance this thing, you know, and you keep your bills paid and keep ahead of things. Our children were, they spent the first 6 to 7 years in the country about 100 miles from us. The African Mission had a school for children, missionary children, and they got through that. And then they had to go over high school over to Kenya, Nairobi, Rift Valley Academy. And one time we were kind of short in finances, and we'd sent some money over there. It evidently didn't seem to get through, and so I gave our son a check, and I said, when you go in the office, check out and see if that money has come in. If it hasn't, here's a check you can give to her, and that'll put you in the clear. You can carry on your schooling. Well, somehow or other, wires got crossed, and the accountant took the check and cashed it, and that bounced that sunk our account. Here at home, the bank wired down to Brother Jefferson and said, this fellow out there, he's blowing his account. And thank God for these men here that helped us out in the situation. And then I'm thankful, too, that thing finally got straightened out. In the meantime, men like Brother Borono had a little fund that helped missionaries finance their children. They got a hold of that thing, you know. And, boy, things like that. The Lord has His way of handling situation and financial situation and getting the straights. And it's marvelous how the Lord has an eye on what you're doing. He knows all about it. He knows when it's hard going. Well, that's one of the illustrations of God's faithfulness. I could also mention something like, for instance, when the troubles came, you know, 3 times we had to leave the country. Talk about refugees. I don't know who a refugee was, but I found out. It isn't as nice as it sounds, but on one occasion the American consulate said, get out of the country. Don't ask any questions. Just get out and we'll tell you after you get out. Well, so things that happened over there that we didn't know of that they do. And one time we were about 100 miles from the border, and it wasn't too difficult to get out. But there were some other missionaries down country about 350 miles on Kisangani, and they couldn't get out. They were trapped in there. You know, we're all delivered. There are about 30 of those missionaries we knew personally, been in our homes, the children had gone to school, our children. They were delivered by the way of glory. There's one doctor, he's operating, and took him off the operating table, took him down with his wife and children or other and shot them and threw them in the river. You know, the wrath of man, God's going to make it even crazier. And the cause of war drifted past and things were coming peaceable again. They went in there and they had a gospel meeting on the shores of that river. And God worked and souls were saved. We got out by the way of the border. It's marvelous just to see the Lord work. Some people are afraid, young people are afraid about going over there. You know, I just rejoiced in a way that the Lord's opened doors. You've got a list in the prayer list there. It says other countries. They don't even publish the name, where they are, or what they're doing. You know, the Lord didn't promise to follow Him you weren't going to get hurt. You might get hurt. You even might lose your life. But so what? You do what He wants you to do, and He'll be glorified in what you do and the way it goes about. So you can trust Him. And in case of any eventualities, the early Christians, just a name to confess Christ, it meant they're going to get it, but they did it. And today it's not any different. The Lord's with His people. In the center of the Lord's will, Paul got put in prison. God overruled it, and He's doing the same today.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Mm-hmm. God certainly is faithful. Who are the missionaries that are currently in Zaire, so we can remind the folks to pray afresh for them?
Well, they're very few left. There's Jonathan and June Peck, and three children. There's Ray Bucks and their family. There's Bert Mast, Canadian from, and there's Pearl Winterburn. There's Marion Paisley and Lois Michener. And Les and Peg Green are on the way.
Right. Well, can you give us, all of us, any, what do I say, advice on how we should really support the missionaries? How's the best way we can help the missionaries?
Well, we're in it together. We appreciate the fact that we're not in it alone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've got some awfully good communication system these days. I'm amazed. One time we were there in Nairobi and you pick up the phone and you put those digits, those 10 numbers, and about 2 seconds the phone's ringing over here on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God's got a better system than that.
Amen.
When you folks pray, things happen over there. God isn't limited by space and time. So keep praying.
I think that's good advice for us, and we'll close our interview off at this time and turn it back to our chairman. We're a little early, but I think we've enjoyed this interview very much, Barry. Thank you kindly.